Call the meeting to order. First order of business is the approval of the agenda. Link, any changes to the agenda this evening?
No changes.
All right then.
You have seniority.
My motion is to approve the agenda.
And I second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the agenda as posted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, carried. You guys are going to be working, quite a bit of duty this evening. Our next item is the approval of the minutes of the April 23rd, 2015 meeting.
Gentlemen, the minutes of April 23rd, 2015 have been reviewed, proofed, and corrected by Mr. Robertson and staff. And if you so move to approve the minutes, they should be as amended.
Motion to approve the minutes as amended of April 23rd, 2015.
Second.
It's moved and seconded to approve the minutes of the April 23rd, 2015 meeting as amended. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. All right, ladies and gentlemen, already we've reached a point in our meeting where it's time for our public hearings. We're glad that you're with us this evening, giving up your Thursday evening to participate in your planning and zoning process. I assure you that anyone who wishes to speak on a given application will be given the opportunity to do so at the appropriate time and in accordance with the rules of the commission. Speaking of the rules of the commission, allow me to direct your attention to our esteemed counsel to my left and your right, who has a few well-chosen words to share with you about the way we conduct our meetings and the way we would like you to conduct yourselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Chairman Wheatley stated, this is the time for the scheduled public hearings before the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission, as shown on tonight's agenda. These proceedings are conducted under the rules of the Planning and Zoning Commission. All commission matters are discussed and voted on publicly in open meetings. Everyone present is invited to stay throughout the commission's deliberations, the commission meeting to view the commission's deliberations and the votes on the pending applications. In addition, these proceedings are broadcast on the internet at sussexcountyde.gov. Everyone in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion, and no applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. Please don't do anything that distracts from these proceedings, and we ask that you follow the directions of the chairman. If you have a telephone or similar device, we also ask that you turn it off or switch it to silent service. The hearings will be conducted as follows. First, the application will be announced by the chairman, and the director will review the application and describe any agency comments or correspondence that's been received. Then the applicant will present and explain its application to the commission and may present any relevant exhibits and testimony in support of the application. The commission may question the applicant and its witnesses at any time. After the applicant's presentation, the chairman will invite public comment. Supporters will go first, followed by any opponents. If there's a spokesperson or an attorney representing an organized group, we ask that they identify themselves and speak first. Whenever speaking to the commission, please come to the podium and identify yourself by name and place of residence for the record. We ask that you be concise in your statements and avoid being repetitious. The chairman does have the authority to set reasonable time limits on testimony from the applicant and the audience, and he has the authority to terminate testimony from anyone that is unduly repetitive or irrelevant. In addition, Sussex County in its zoning and land use decisions does not discriminate against persons based on race, color, religion, national origin, handicap or disability, familial status, sex, creed, marital status, age, sexual orientation, or gender identity. Public comments made on the basis of bias and stereotype concerning people within these protected classes will not be taken into consideration by the county in its deliberations. During the proceedings, no direct questioning or cross-examination will be permitted. All questions should be directed to the commission, and the commission will direct the question to the appropriate person if necessary. Finally, there will be no rebuttal by the applicant unless requested or permitted by the commission. An individual supporting or opposing the application will only be allowed one opportunity to speak to the commission. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir, we thank you. Our first public hearing is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115, Article 10, Subsections 69 and 72, Article 11, Subsections 77 and 80, and Article 11A, Subsection 83.2 and 83.6 of the Code of Sussex County relating to temporary removable vendor stands.
For the public benefit, this is an ordinance that contains approximately 5 or 6 pages, but it's based on different sections of the code, and there's a whole page of whereas and wherefores as to why we're considering this ordinance tonight. Just to read the synopsis of this ordinance, there have been several proposed temporary removable vendor stands, including food trucks, that have sought approval in Sussex County. And until now, there was no clear path under the zoning code governing the approval process. Instead, approvals have been sought by default under the conditional use catch-all category of residential, business, commercial, or industrial uses when the purpose of this chapter are more fully met by issuing a conditional use permit. As a result of this, existing stands run the risk of violation, and those seeking approval face uncertainty about how to proceed under the code. With this amendment, such stands in the B1, C1, and CR1 districts can receive over-the-counter approval if certain specific requirements are satisfied. In those districts, if the director still has concerns about the proposal, the owner of the stand can seek a special use exception from the Sussex County Board of Adjustment. This amendment will not affect temporary removable stands, farm stands, that are permitted uses in the AR1 district under Section 115-20A3. Now, this is a synopsis of the ordinance, and I did receive one correspondence late this afternoon. It's from David Hutt, one of the attorneys for Morris James Wilson Haberg & Byard LLP. And I'll just read it. It's a couple paragraphs, but I'll read it. I will be unable to attend tonight's meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission and wanted to share my thoughts about the temporary vendor stand ordinance with the commission. In general, I think the proposed ordinance is a good idea, as a client of mine recently had to endure what I called the zoning trifecta: public hearings before the Board of Adjustment, Planning and Zoning Commission, and County Council, in order to get a vendor stand approved. My concern about the proposed ordinance is that I believe the time limitation of 6 months will generate Board of Adjustment applications, as vendors are likely to want more than 6 months of time for operations. I represented the Hocker family in their application for a barbecue vending truck at the Hocker Supercenter, and the time period they requested, and which was recommended by the commission, was from April 1 through November 1. The food vendor application prior to the Hocker's family application was filed by Chester Townsend for Fish Killers, and the time period for operations was also April 1 through November 1. I understand that recently the commission recommended approval of Taco Rio without time limitations, but with the requirement that the vending truck not be permanently affixed to the site. I can only speak for the Hocker family application, as I did not attend the public hearing for the other food vendor applications. But there was not any anxiety or negative comments about allowing operations from April 1 through November 1 during the Hocker family's three public hearings. For vendors along the coast and likely those inland, the shoulder seasons are significant, as things like Sea Witch and other festivals and events occur when there is still a decent chance of good weather at the beach. There are certainly months of the year that the beach is essentially closed because of weather, but I believe that a vending time of 8 to 9 months, or from March 15 through November 15, is more appropriate, as it would encourage or encompass what the weather allows for as both the primary and shoulder seasons in our county, and still keep temporary food vendors from being year-round operations. And he apologizes for the last-minute notice, and thanks for sharing this with the commission. And that's all I have.
All right, sir, we thank you.
Just to elaborate a little bit on what Mr. Lang said, we tried to make it so there was criteria to sort of establish this, because as you all know, we've seen a lot of these food trucks come through, and it just seems like overkill to have to go through so much of a process for something that really is temporary. So what Mr. Hutt was talking about was one of the criteria was that it not be in existence for more than 6 months. You know, obviously, if you're going to have a what amounts to a permanent type structure, then you should have to do the same thing that somebody who wants to build a store should do, you know, when we're not talking about permanent structures. They're limited to food-related goods and agricultural products. Can't be affixed to the premises. No more than one on any one property. That way, you know, we don't sort of get flea markets cropping up, you know, on a piece of property. It can't be wider than 8 feet 6 inches or longer than 45 feet. We tried to get some dimensional requirement from that. Council came back and said, we'll look to see what DLDOT does as far as the size of licensed vehicles. That's where that dimension came from, like the big, I think that was the size basically of a school bus. Again, no permanent connections to utilities or water. It can't interfere with vehicular or pedestrian movement on the parcel or adjacent rights of way. And then what an applicant would do would bring to the office written approval from the property owner, a drawing showing the location, and then if Mr. Lank or Ms. Cornwell or staff is satisfied with it, then they would grant the approval. If they have concerns about the location, the size of the property, the effect on the parking on the property or neighboring properties or roadways or other good cause, what they would do then would be to send it off to the Board of Adjustment for a special use exception. So that way, it's still quicker than having to go through a conditional use and then county council. You know, you're in the Board of Adjustment, which is, what, a six-week or two-month process versus
8 weeks
versus 16. Several months and a lot more expense. The whole idea was to streamline this and make it easier for, you know, the agricultural vendors or the food truck vendors to get moving, you know, without so much red tape. So the example we used, it was crazy for example, Chipotle and the outlets to really have less approval oversight than a food truck, you know, in a parking lot. That's, you know, the food truck was having to go the whole conditional use. Chipotle was just a site plan approval. That was sort of illogical. So that's what this was designed to do.
And the way the ordinance is prepared, it basically says the same thing in the B1,
yeah,
and then in the C1, and then the CR1. It basically repeats itself, but it has to be because they're separate chapters.
Section, yeah. All right, sir, thank you. Gentlemen?
Is there so no consideration to DLDOT at all?
In this, there's not. You know, it's more general, you know, like if Mr. Lank or the office has concerns about parking neighboring properties or roadways. That had come up, you know, and the one thing that does need to be provided is evidence of a current state of Delaware business license to show that they've got a business license. Just because I'm not, and I don't know what Mr. Lank thinks, I'm not sure if you're in a vehicle that DLDOT's going to say anything about, you know, like the Taco Rio place. It's basically a truck parked in a parking space.
Well, what about setbacks off the road and roadway and that?
Well, that's the comes back into the that sort of kick out the location on the property.
Basically, would have to meet setback requirements, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
The other thing you said, reference DLDOT. In the DLDOT, anytime you expand a property that's commercial, DLDOT wants to see it. And if there's appropriate, the fire marshal has to see it, and building code, in this instance of a vehicle, it would just be DLDOT. And then there would be health department, because they have to review that it fits food cook, and they have to be able to approve that process. So we have to know it's been approved. So there would be a couple agencies in different scenarios, depending on what the scenario is.
Okay, so they're still going through those agencies.
Yeah, they would have to, because if we went ahead and approved it, and they went and started, and DLDOT would be on us for granting the approval without them at least giving us a letter of no contention.
Yeah, right.
So we would ask for it up front.
Okay.
And with the setbacks, you know, like if it's in a parking space that's established in the setback, that's not going to be the same as if somebody's wanting to put in, something on an area that's otherwise undeveloped.
Well, if this is granted, we would come up with a policy procedures and let the applicants would be made aware of what they needed to come in with a letter request and a site plan and what permits they needed up front. Otherwise, we're going to hold it until they get those permits, and that would be another time delay. So the policy would tell them up front what they need.
Like the Hawker one, you know, or that one is in a parking lot on their property in a trailer that, you know, if it didn't sell barbecue, could have parked there, you know. And so the idea is that this would have streamlined that process. And there's others we've had. That's just, you know, one that comes to mind for Mr. Hutz.
Being Hawker has been mentioned several times already, their application required a variance because of the setback requirement. They're basically in the front yard. They had to go to, that's why they went to the board. And the fact that they were using a mobile home type structure, even though it was a utility type trailer converted to a food prep facility, basically.
So under the Hawker example and this ordinance, they would still have to go back to the Board of Adjustments because they are in the setback.
It depends on, we have to see the drawing.
Yeah, you have to.
They've already got the approval from the board for whatever number of years they applied for. It's probably a five-year approval for that application and that one specific. And there's been a couple others have been to the board also. So the ones that went to the board went through the commission, got a recommendation to the council. Council held a public hearing, made a decision, and then they had to go to the board for variances and the use of a mobile home type structure.
We're going to try to eliminate all that.
Our process would be that if there's some negativity that we find, then we say, well, this has to go to the board.
You know,
the board can make the decision.
And if it looks like it just needs a hearing because it's right up, you know, it's going to affect the neighboring property or whatever, just so that there's an opportunity for people to participate, it goes to the Board of Adjustment. Still, it's one stop instead of two.
Yeah, it would be one stop instead of three hearings, and it would be substantially less fee and survey fees and all that would be less too.
Ross?
It generally makes sense to me. I think the discussion probably started here when we were getting these types of applications. If I understand the letter that you read into the record, Mr. Lake,
yes,
they're asking for 7 months versus six that's in the proposed language.
And I think he was trying to be specific and suggested that rather than say 8 or 9 months, I think it'd be better to have dates if you decide to make that such a motion. He referenced from November or March 15th to November 15th. He made reference to the Hocker, for example, they referenced and the decision was April 1st to November 1st.
So they would prefer to have a specific dates within the permitting process not to exceed 7 months?
I'm saying it would be easier for us to have specific dates than it would say 8 months,
actually, I think
6 months or whatever.
Better
dates
they were looking for.
The dates are
but well, I like the March 15th to the November 15th.
That way everybody knows you don't have 6 months all over the
right.
calendar. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And when we were drafting this, the 6 months, that was not a number that was tied to any one particular thing. It was more just we want to make sure this is temporary. So
right.
I mean, the dates make sense.
The one difficulty you get into, that is if you're considering an agriculture product, you get into the Christmas trees and the wreaths that come out right before Christmas time. So November 15th isn't long enough on that instance. But that's rare. And typically they're set up at the food line and the
Well, and then and, you know you take slam dunkers back in, and
back
if somebody slam
again.
Dunk wanted to, you know, license somebody to have a food vendor out in the parking lot instead of in the building, it's in the winter months. So to have
That's
it
true.
Specifically to the dates may be cumbersome for special events.
Yeah, right.
That might occur off season. So maybe you know not to exceed 8 months or something like that, and let you pick and then specify within the permit seems to make sense.
Okay.
We'll let the lawyers figure out how to word that.
Yeah, I mean, you all would just be the recommendation with, you know, when it comes back up for a motion, if you're inclined to approve it, it'd be just a recommendation of approval with the change that the time period be extended from 6 months to 8 months.
When's the council expect some action on this?
I think they wanted to get it going just because we're in the springtime, nearing the end of the springtime, and they wanted to get it up and running so that, you know, agricultural vendor stands could start using this. So.
Make a move one way or the other.
Yeah.
Would the trucks have to leave the site?
Or no.
Close?
Well, you mean at the end of the 8 months? The idea would be that they'd have to leave. Yeah. The wagons, the trucks, the stands, whatever. Because if you're, you know, growing roots there, you know, then you need to come back through the conditional use.
Defeats the purpose.
Yeah, right.
The Marty's question to council gets this for public hearing on May 19th.
That's a tight time.
So they would be holding their public hearing that date.
Yeah, we had it at council a couple times for discussion, and it was revised, and it was actually revised again, and then it was introduced. So there was some delay on the council side getting it in, but I know they want to get it in as soon as possible to hit the summer.
We might be able to make a recommendation on it this evening.
Yeah, I think so. Can you come up with some language
yeah,
to incorporate
sure.
that?
Yeah, we'll come refer back to it.
Is your thought to make it 8 months or to hang dates on it?
Hang dates on it, not to exceed 8 month period.
Okay.
And that way, if somebody said, well, you know, I wanted to do special events in the wintertime, but then they're going to have to encapsulate that into their permit, you know, or come back for a separate permit.
Right.
And the March 15th through the November 15th would be 8 months.
Well, but I think what Marty's saying is he wants to leave some latitude so that if somebody's in the Christmas tree or wreath business or something and they need to go to December 24th or something like that, that you would have the flexibility. What you might want to say is from is that it can be for any 8-month period between March 1st and December 31st, but you can pick the 8 months within those 10 months might be a way to do it.
Well, I mean, like I said, you know, there's some events that overlap the holiday season. And since I officiated basketball for 25 years, I'm familiar with slam dunk the way it used to be.
Right.
And so, you know, you don't want to get into a situation where you have to have a separate permit for one event that overlaps the holiday season.
Well, that would be an event, but we're talking about use of sites within B1, C1, and CR1 districts.
Can you just get an event?
Yeah, that would be special.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Be limited to that could be limited to a 3-day event.
Yeah, I'd rather see it by request. Because then everybody's open and then everybody's closed. It makes it easy on.
And what do they have to remove the truck from the premises?
That's in the way.
Yeah. In the ordinance already. Okay. But again, that's approval of the director for not to exceed 3 days, 3 times a year.
Right.
Okay. Special events or promotion activities.
Well, let's see if anyone here is has an interest. Is there anyone here who would like to speak in regard to an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 regarding the temporary removable vendor stands? Okay, come on up. Okay, wait till you get up here, and then give us your name, and then you can have all night.
Good afternoon. Paul Ricker, 18171 Deer Forest, Georgetown.
Thanks, Paul.
If you change that to 8 months with the vendors, going back to your AR for the vendor carts, if that's set up as 6 months, are you going to go back into the AR code and change that one from 6 months to 8 months to match that?
This ordinance only relates you to B1, C1, and CR1, period. If we had to amend, we'd have to come back with a new ordinance to amend the AR1.
Okay, because it's like with the bottom in the synopsis where it says this amendment will not affect temporary removable farm stands that are not permitted in an AR district. Now, shouldn't that line say and permitted uses in the AR1, C1, and CR1, since the farm, the temporary removable farm stands can be putting them under an AR permitted use?
That's certainly implied because that's already in the code that those are permitted. I don't think we need to restate that something that's permitted is still permitted.
But. So you can go into, with March, the farm, the produce guy can't be there, but a hot dog stand can.
Well, not in AR1 district because this only applies to C1.
The C1 and CR. But if it's any permitted use, if I'm reading it, like the permitted use for the farm vendors in there, for the vendors in there, if it's a permitted use in an AR, if a CR1 says any permitted use that's permitted in an AR zone, then I'm thinking that that vendor cart is a permitted use in a CR1 zone already. Or is the CR1 or the C1, however you work it.
I'm not sure I'm following.
The ordinance says that any use in a C1, you go to CR1, is any use permitted in an AR district?
Right.
Permitted
right.
use, not accessory use, just permitted use.
Right. So what you're saying is that would pull in the farm stand from AR into the CR1.
Well, this comes into my problem with AR and GR and CR for permitted uses. I believe there's a difference between an AR and a GR and a CR. It's
no
not.
Question. No. No question about it. Different.
Like that. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Anyone else like to speak in favor or opposed? All right, then. Anyone else on the commission have any questions? Ms. Cornwell, do you have any comment or a question?
I have no comments or questions.
Okay.
Time.
Thank you, Mr. Lang.
No questions.
Okay. Mr. Robertson.
No questions. Thanks.
All right, then. Anyone else on the commission? All right, then. That being the case, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning. Next public hearing is subdivision 2015-1, lands of Roy F. Rogers.
Might have too many there. For the benefit of the commission, I'm passing down copies of the survey site plan for this application. This is application number 2015-1 for Roy F. Rogers. Parcel zoned AR1 Agriculture Residential District in Indian River 100, Sussex County. Proposing to divide 17.42 acres into 5 lots. and also requesting a waiver from the street design requirements and forested buffer requirements. The property is located at the southeast corner of Washington Street Extended and Walt Carmine Lane. Tax map ID is District 234, map 32, parcel 40.09. I will advise the commission that lots K through N, which are the subject of this application, have access to either Walt Carmine Lane, a road dedicated to public use, but it is privately maintained, or Washington Street Extended, a private road. That Walt Carmine Lane was dedicated to public use and recorded on February 22, 2007. That the commission had previously approved five lots, being lots G through J, under subdivision number 2011-6, a similar request. The two lots were approved on the eastern side of Walt Carmine Lane by the commission in 1998. That the previously existing lots along the western side of Walt Carmine Lane were previously extended in size only. That the survey plot indicated that the Walt Carmine Lane is paved to a point approximately 280 feet south of lot K, one of the proposed lots, and that the subdivision was not submitted to the Technical Advisory Committee for review since it is basically a minor subdivision along an existing road. We did receive some comments from two agencies. The Conservation District provided comments in the form of a memorandum dated May 4, 2015, referencing that there are three soil types on this property, that the applicant will be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during construction and to maintain vegetation after construction, that no storm flood hazard areas are affected, that it is not likely that any on-site or off-site drainage improvements will be required, and that no tax ditches are affected. Lastly, the County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division provided comments in the form of a memorandum dated May 6, 2015, referencing that the site is not in a proposed or current county operated and maintained sanitary sewer and or water district, that the site is located in the town of Millsboro growth area, that conformity to the North Coastal Planning Study will be required, that the parcel is not in an area where the county will provide sewer service, and that the applicant can contact the town of Millsboro for information relating to sewer service, and that a concept plan is not required. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
All right, sir, we thank you. Yes, sir, and you are?
Roy Rogers, Millsboro, Delaware.
All right, sir, you've heard what our director read into the record on your behalf. Do you have anything you wish to add?
Not a whole lot, just what you all got the information on.
Okay, mainly. All right, well, let's see if anyone on commission has any questions. We'll start with Mr. Burton.
Is the plan to continue the paving to Washington Street?
That is the plan, yes.
And that would be something you would do as part of this?
We're hoping the state would still do it, or county, whatever, that did it before, that they did half of it before.
It will not be the county.
Well, I mean, whatever state, I guess it was.
So this is a state-maintained dirt road?
No.
It's a state-dedicated street to public use, but it's privately maintained.
Privately maintained, yes.
Because the state would not take over maintenance since it wasn't constructed to state standards. And then the state came in and I believe your representative provided funds and they paved the street up to that portion that's paved from John J. Williams Highway, Route 24, back to that one site.
And I guess the reason they stopped paving there is because there were no other lots.
Enough funds at the time, I guess. And there was another couple more lots that had already been approved before, but they only still stopped before the last one, I think it was. But I guess that the way they were talking, they didn't have enough funds to finish the whole thing, what I was told to now.
Has it gotten any better?
Probably not.
Sure. Okay, so we're looking at essentially four lots.
Yes.
Because Jay's in the previous approved.
Yes.
Lot. And the septic will be handled how?
And whoever gets those individual lots will handle their own.
They'll have their own. Have they been tested?
Yes. He's done feasibility test already. But it's he's already submitted it to DENREC.
And has there been a letter of approval on it?
I have this, but I don't know if that's what you could need or not.
If you would hand that to our attorney over here, and he'll take a look at it. And
Ernst, do you have a septic feasibility?
We have not received a letter specifically from DENREC that the septic feasibility has been green.
This looks like the study, but not the
That's
approval.
That's the study prepared by the Del Mar Environmental. It does not have a reference to the approval of the permit. So the DENREC asks and gives the guidelines, the septic feasibility is established through the consultant and reviewed by the DENREC, and if they grant approval, there's a letter of septic feasibility is approved, and there's not one here. But it has been prepared and submitted, right? No, there's not one here. You can have this back. What the application and the application way it was advertised is that Mr. Rogers is requesting a waiver from the street design requirement. So thereby you're considering, he'd ask Mr. Rogers what type of street he's proposing to build, or is he hoping that he's going to remain it as dirt or get the state to grant extension of the pavement surface through representative funds? And then he's also asked for a waiver from the forested buffer requirement since it's a minor subdivision.
And that would be on the farmland that backs up to the lots.
Well, it's not shown on the lots. He's asked for a waiver, so he doesn't have to put it in. He has the acreage to the rear of these four lots.
But what is your street waiver requirement? What are you asking for as far as a street waiver?
The waiver, so we can just get these lots approved for now, because until we get the road done, the rest of the road.
We are assuming that the state's going to build that road for you.
Yes, we're hoping.
Mr. Rogers, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
You're subdividing these lots in anticipation of selling them.
No, we are not. This is not in the process of selling to nobody. These are lots that my mother has given to her grandchildren. They're not being sold.
Well, I understand, but someday they might be sold. You know, somebody, your grandchildren could take title to the lot, sell it to anybody they want to, right?
Oh, I'm assuming, yes, but that's not the purpose of it right now.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just thinking about this notion with the road. I can tell you as a taxpayer, I'm a little reluctant to build a road for you, okay? And I think that's maybe something you want to think about, because most developers have to put in their own street. The county or town or the state does not build a road for you just because you want one. I'm a little concerned that the application seems to be made on that basis, is that you're anticipating that the state of Delaware is going to build this road for you. And my question would be, why? Why should they do that?
Well, I just assume it's just something that they agreed to do it before, and that other people get their roads done to their property a lot of time. This, like I said, this is not out here. We're not out here to make money for these lots at all. She just wanted to give it to her grandchildren.
I understand. Yeah, I understand. Okay. All right. Mr. Ross?
Can the lots be approved with on the dirt road?
Not without the waiver.
Without the waiver.
You have to grant a waiver.
Right.
To allow the lots to be built on the existing right-of-way that as it already exists.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Okay. Mr. Ross.
I'm just a little confused on the information we were given. It was dividing 17.42 acres into five lots.
Well, the survey showed Lot J, and Lot J actually is a parcel number that exists.
Okay, yes.
But it does actually provide access to the residual parcel.
So it's not divide 17.42 by 5 or 4. There's a residual land.
There's a land, right.
So the parcels are just over 9/10. Okay, so that clears that up. The sewer, is there access to municipal sewer? Is there any, where's the nearest municipal
center? No, it would be septic and well.
Yeah, but in the letter from the TAC or somebody that you read, it said something about inquiring about central sewer from the
No, it was only a suggestion from engineering that if they wanted to verify this, the availability of central sewer, they would go to the town of Milford.
So if it's not
The county would not be providing sewer service.
Gotcha.
Right.
And we don't have septic feasibility, so.
Right. But the lots are big enough, and the soils are pretty high there, so I'm assuming that you'll get on-site septic.
He was saying, the person that did this said that he said there's no limitations to what he saw.
Yeah, it doesn't appear so in writing by, to be any limitation.
Just the commission, despite that, it sounds like you'll get it, but they likely won't act on it until you have that septic feasibility back from Denrick.
And then where's the access to the residual lands then?
Washington Street.
It's off here.
On the north side, and then Walk Carmine Lane on the west side is also owned by the same, no, somebody else, I'm sorry, just on the south side of Washington Street, which would be everything to the right.
Yeah, to the right of Lot N, there's still access to that parcel. And then what are your plans for the residual lands, Mr. Rogers? Do you have any plans for the residual property?
Not that I know of, no. Still going to be used as farmland.
Okay. I would echo the chairman's concerns about the waiver for the roads. It's just something that, you know, it's not something we customarily do.
Well, I mean, it was done last time. We had a waiver last time for the last four lots.
Wait a minute. From who? Who you had a waiver?
Commission granted a waiver on the last four lots that were created, and as I stated earlier, they were created. Subdivision number 2011-6.
Okay.
So it would have been a public hearing in 2011.
Okay.
That was, apparently I wasn't on the commission then. Yeah.
Well, I was.
I can, just for the benefit.
I don't remember how I voted, but I was here.
The benefit of the commission, I'll pass down some little tax maps. It's not color-coded, but it's kind of hard to read, but.
The waiver is kind of a different issue than what I was concerned about. If the granting of the waiver is less of a concern than how the road's going to get built, at least was for me. When this road was paved and this paving was put in, were there people living in these houses on there?
Not the ones on that east side, no.
There were the lots on the west side of Walt Carmine Lane.
Been there.
Were small lots, and the estate provided extensions to each of those lots.
Okay.
That didn't require a public hearing, it just made the lots larger.
But there are no lots.
Four lots and a couple other lots previously were approved by the commission. So they had maxed out the number of minor lots that they could get approval for
right.
on an existing road.
Right.
And they came in and applied for four additional lots, and they were approved with a waiver. And the buffer part wasn't required since it was considered minor.
Right.
But then he's come in and applied for four additional lots plus resistance.
Yeah. What I'm trying to do is make sense of how it would make sense for the state to pave a road that doesn't serve anyone at the time it's being paved. I guess that's where I'm not quite understanding why they would do that. Apparently there were people living on this section of the road.
Right.
They were on the west side, so I can kind of see how that might.
It appears that the state paved up to where it served the original lots on the west side.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking too. It appeared when you look at it. That's what it looks like they did.
But as I stated, about 280 feet to where the pavement stops from the subject
right.
site, which would be Lot K's southernmost corner,
yeah.
which is about lines up with the last lot that was extended.
But if this was a private road and we could say, well, fine, when the lots get built, then make your HOA and have them maintain the road and all that. But it's not. It's a public road. So we can't necessarily say...
It's a public road.
Well, yeah, but there are a lot of developments that are public roads where the HOA maintains them.
What is, this is the case.
Because they're not built to state specs.
This is a road that was dedicated to public use.
If it's dedicated, it can be dedicated to public use, but not state maintained, and then the HOA...
And do county code specifications.
Yes, sir, that's exactly right, yep.
Still grant the road, will require county road specs and make it be maintained by the lot owners.
And this is the, yeah, and this is what I'm thinking, because if we've already granted a waiver for part of the street, would, then granting it for the rest of the street is not as much of an issue for me as it would, might otherwise be.
Still have to build the road, but the county specifications, and then the lot owners would have to maintain the road.
I'm just concerned that there's some expectation that the state of Delaware is going to build a road for lots where there's nobody living there. I think, I just, now that's, if the state wants to do that, that's their, you know, I can, that's up to them, but.
What I said earlier, Bob.
Whose area is this?
Collins.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't Rich Collins that did the.
Oh, no, no.
The funds.
No, what had to have been.
John.
John, yeah.
What happened?
But I understand why that happened. There were people living there.
Well, there is people, another person living on the west side of, all the way down to Washington Street.
Down here?
Yes, all the way down to Washington Street.
A different parcel.
That's a different
parcel. Parcel, yes.
Yeah.
Right. But the state chose to pave it only to that one point.
Mm-hmm.
Who's maintaining the road right now?
We are.
So you are maintaining the street. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the point was when they, as I read earlier, the state, when the original four lots were created, if I'm a note here, the street was actually dedicated and recorded to public use on February 22nd of 07. And then the state came in and paid it sometime thereafter with discretionary funds from a state representative.
Right, which is
not unusual.
Right,
it's a,
right.
Typically, it's a subdivision that already exists. Its street was already established on Senate Bill 313 back in 1975. They accepted streets into public use, and then the representative would provide funds and go in and build the street. They would basically pave over what existed. They didn't fix the drainage. They just paved it for a better access.
And the difference here is this is a new subdivision.
Right.
Essentially, it's a new subdivision.
And so technically, I don't think.
I'm not sure they could do it if they wanted to. I'm not sure that the law would allow them to do it, frankly.
I'm done.
Okay. Anything, Ms. Cornwell, you have a question?
No.
Ms. Cornwell. Okay, Mr. Lank, anymore?
A little drawing I passed down, a little confusing because it shows so many other areas. On the middle, in the middle right of that drawing, there's about 10 lots of dark, shading popped up dark. There's a little note that says site, little L-shaped reverse L. That's the general area. Then you notice the smaller lots with the shading on the left side of that walk, Carmine Road, that's about where the state maintenance stops, the pavement stops.
Okay.
Just for reference.
All right, thanks. Okay, Councilor, you have any?
No, I don't, thanks.
All right, sir, if you take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anybody here with an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2015-1 lands of Roy F. Rogers? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2015-1? Anyone on the commission have any questions? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us for the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning. Apparently, he's going to call the office in the morning. All right, then, our next public hearing is